As the saying goes, you scream ice cream, we all scream for ice cream. So how about some scream science? Yeah, we've heard that before. I know you've heard it because it's been on TV, it's in the movies, and that actually is the standard Hollywood scream. You hear it when people fall off a cliff or they fight off the zombies. It's called the Wilhelm scream, and I'm playing it today because despite hearing screams all the time and instinctively, right, you know that a scream can make you feel frightened, exactly how this happens is not well known. So a team of scientists decided to find out. They recorded and rated screams to pinpoint that secret ingredient that makes screams so scary. And what they found was published this week in the journal Current Biology. David Poppel is an author on that study. He's a professor of psychology and neuroscience at NYU and director of the Max Planck Institute Department of Neuroscience in Frankfurt, Germany. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Your research, speech and communications, why so interested in studying screams?
Well, I mean, it's definitely something unconventional to study, but not if half the people in your lab are in the middle of either having babies, just had babies, or obsessing about how their brains are being hijacked by the screams in their lives. So we had anecdotal reasons in the lab to start looking into this. And there's, of course, a more principled answer, which is, as you said, screams are something we all know about. It's sort of uncontroversially a universal vocalization. Every kid screams in every culture, no matter what language you grew up in, and every adult screams when, you know, in the context of an alarm signal or fear.
Yeah, so you had people come into your lab and scream?
Absolutely. That was the most fun part, or maybe the second most fun part. First of all, we did, of course, the internet research of downloading as many movie screams and other screams we could find. And that's, of course, in its own right, pretty amusing. But then we had people come in the lab and scared the hell out of them and had them and recorded screams in the sound booth. And, well, this was done in the NYU community, and there are some surprisingly good screamers, just blood-curdling, scary stuff.
Why am I not surprised? This is New York. Now, we have a couple of different examples from your experiment. I'm going to play a couple of clips. And the first clip rated a 2 on the scary meter, and the second clip was way up there and ranked a 5. So let me play that first clip. That was rated a 2. Not too scary, David?
Yeah, for me, a 2.5, maybe.
All right, let me play what we call the heavy scream. Wow. Okay,
that's really scary.
That is scary. Now, why is that more scary than the first one?
So what we did to find out a little bit more about screams, about which, surprisingly, very little is known, is apply some acoustic analyses that are a bit unconventional. So if you do the sort of, you know, person on the street test, what makes a scream, a typical and totally plausible answer would be, look, it's something that's very loud, maybe a bit high-pitched, maybe a bit shrill. But it turns out when you use these, you know, some analyses that we actually borrowed from neuroscience, that there's a feature, an attribute of screams that gives them this particular feature, and it's, believe it or not, it's called roughness. That's the technical term for it, roughness. And roughness means that the sound is modulated in its loudness or its amplitude very rapidly. So unlike speech, which of course also has, you know, louder and softer parts as we're having this conversation, those modulations are pretty short. But screams are modulated very rapidly, between 30 to 150 times per second, and it's that feature of rapid modulation that gives us the feeling of what's technically called roughness, and it's a sort of apt term of description.
This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. In case you just joined us, we're talking about the science of screaming with David Poppel of NYU. So the fact that it's scratchy and not, you know, I guess, you know, when you sing, you have a very pure tone, so there's just sort of the opposite of that. It's rough.
Yeah, I mean, very much so. I mean, you can ask people to rate it, right? So if you, suppose you do this right now for yourself and you download from a bunch of movies a bunch of screams and you just play them to listeners and you say, look, just give me a number between, you know, 1 and 5 or 1 and 7. What do you think is the most scary one? And then you can kind of do some acoustic analysis of this. And what we found is that the scarier the scream was rated, the more of this particular roughness modulation the scream contained.
Huh. You know what, just, you know, I had I have three kids, and you know when kids are young and they're crying, they're screaming as babies, but they don't sound repulsive. They sound just the opposite. They're attractive to you.
Well,
I mean, if you're someone else's kid,
I disagree. I've listened to my own three kids scream quite often. So we, of course, in this particular study, and to really get started on this research, did adult human screams. Uh-huh. We did not actually work with baby screams. But that's a good point that you raise. And I'll bet you a dollar that if we look at a bunch of baby screams and we rank them along the same acoustic scale and we try to identify the same attributes, that they really are ranked by how alarming you perceive it as a caregiver. I mean, yeah. I think there are some screams that you hear from your own kids where you say, well, you know, kid's hungry again. But there are some screams, and I suspect those are the ones with a high degree of roughness, that really make you jump up and run.
What else do you need to know? What else about screaming would you like to study?
So we did a whole bunch of behavioral experiments and, of course, also some brain imaging experiments. We wanted to know, well, to what extent do screams of different forms activate the brain in a selective and specific way? So if you play a loud sound to a listener, you know, unsurprisingly and obviously, it activates the auditory parts of the brain. That's kind of old news. If that didn't happen, you'd think your machine was broken or your analysis flawed. But the thing that was kind of neat was that the central part of the fear circuitry of the brain, in particular the amygdala, a nucleus in the brain, was also activated in a selective way. Now, that in its own right is totally sensible because it's part of the fear circuitry, and I'm playing you a scary sound. Mm-hmm. But what was more surprising is that it was selectively and parametrically changed as a function of this roughness. So it acted like kind of an auditory area that says the more of this roughness modulation and scariness it has, the more I'm going to activate. So it's a very effective stimulus to elicit a response and to get you to act.
How did that Wilhelm scream get to be the Hollywood scream? You have any idea?
I mean, it's the most effective thing. It's like it's like alarm signals, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you find these screams, they turn out to be the things that are attention grabbing, which is what you want, very effective and quick to something that you respond to quickly, and most importantly, that are unambiguous. So one of the kind of neat parts of the experiments that we did is to demonstrate that these modulations that are typical of screams, of alarm signals, are really reserved for them. So that's why we called it an acoustic niche. So other, you know, many sounds are modulated in many ways, but the region is really reserved for screams in a highly selective way, and that's reflected in how selectively it activates the brain's the fear circuitry.
Yeah. So this is an experiment we can all try at home, but we should alert our neighbors in advance. We'll cut down on the police calls, I think, David. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. David Poppel is professor of psychology and neuroscience at New York University and director of the Max Planck Institute, Department of Neuroscience in Frankfurt, Germany.